Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with registered dietitian Vasanto Molina, the author of the new book, Cooking Vegan. We will discuss how a healthy vegan diet can contribute to your health and longevity. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here's an interesting study showing that bromelain, the enzyme that's found in pineapple, could help heal tendinitis, and this is according to basic research studies. Responsible for some 40% of minor sports injuries, tendinitis affects fingers, wrists, shoulders, elbows, basically any joint subject to recreational overuse. Both weekend warriors and more serious athletes can avoid getting sidelined for too long by paying special attention to their diet, in addition to rest, ice, compression, and elevation, or what the physical therapist called RICE, R-I-C-E. In particular, promising new basic research suggests that bromelain, the enzyme found in pineapple, may get you back into the game. A recent study in phytotherapy research found that bromelain-fed rats developed 27% more tendon cells, indicating a better healing response compared to a control group. Now, why might this be? Bromelain may help calm inflammation, support collagen production, and act as a cleanup agent, digesting dead cells to help injuries re-knit themselves more smoothly. Indeed, one study from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons found that bromelain was one ingredient in a cocktail of compounds that helped speed healing by 17%. In your diet, it's best to opt for fresh or frozen pineapple as your bromelain source, as studies have shown that it's much more effective than bromelain in supplements. Well, here's another study that shows that dairy products do not promote bone health. Dairy products and calcium do not prevent stress fractures, according to a new study published in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine. Researchers followed adolescent girls for 7 years, tracking their diets, physical activity, and stress fractures. Girls consuming the most dairy products and calcium had no added protection, according to the study. In fact, among the most active girls, exercising more than an hour per day, those who got the most calcium in their diets, coming mostly from dairy products, had more than double the risk of stress fracture compared with those getting the less calcium. Researchers found that vitamin D intake did help cut risk. Girls getting the most vitamin D had half the risk of a fracture compared to girls getting the least amount of vitamin D. Well, here's an interesting study that shows that mom's yogurt puts baby at risk for asthma. Pregnant women who eat yogurt may put their future children at risk of developing asthma, according to a recent study in Denmark. Consuming low-fat yogurt while pregnant is directly linked to the development of childhood asthma and hay fever, and full-fat yogurt is associated with adolescent hay fever. Consuming low-fat yogurt was associated with a 60% increase in asthma and an 80% increase in hay fever compared with zero consumption of low-fat yogurt. The 61,912 women who completed the food questionnaire were part of the Danish National Birth Cohort Study. We'll be back with more after this quick break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
Our question for today is, are cooked blueberries healthy? First of all, I want to mention that blueberries are delicious and pack a powerful antioxidant punch. You would have to eat 5 servings of peas, carrots, apples, squash, or broccoli to get the same amount of antioxidants contained in just 1/2 cup of blueberries. Anthocyanins, that's the pigment that make blueberries blue, are the antioxidant compounds responsible for their health benefits. And these delicious berries are also a good source of fiber. In fact, a 1/2 cup serving gives you almost 3 grams of fiber. What's more, blueberries are a healthy low glycemic load carbohydrate, a good source of both vitamin C and ellagic acid, a compound that inhibits tumor growth in laboratory mice. Whether you cook them or not, when choosing blueberries, I would recommend that you choose organic ones, even though they're more expensive than conventionally grown ones. That's because organic blueberries are free of any potential pesticide residues.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
And our special guest today is Vasanto Molina. Vasanto is a registered dietitian and co-author of the new Cooking Vegan, plus 9 other books that have become classics in the vegetarian world, including Becoming Vegetarian, The New Becoming Vegetarian, Becoming Vegan, and Becoming Raw. Vasanto's books on vegan nutrition and foods have sold 2/3 of a million copies and are now in 7 languages. She has a wonderful website at www.nutraspeak.com. And Vasanto is a longtime friend and colleague. We are both registered dietitians and active in the Vegetarian Nutrition Dietary Practice Group of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And hello, Vasanto.
Hello, John.
Great to have you, and congratulations on your new book, Cooking Vegan.
Oh, thank you. It was such a pleasure to do it, and it was a pleasure to test all the recipes, too.
I bet. You probably. I have a copy right in front of me, just hot off the presses, and it's got some wonderful and delicious-looking, and as well as nutritious-looking recipes. And I think for those listeners, maybe, you know, more and more people are hearing the word vegan. Let's talk about what really is a vegan, to distinguish it compared to other types of vegetarian diets.
Okay, well, vegans don't eat any animal products, so that means not including eggs or dairy. And I think a lot of people know how to have a plant-centered diet, a mainly plant diet, including cheese and eggs and so on, and this takes it one step further so that people are not using any animal products at all, but still getting terrific nutrition and, in fact, a lot of health advantages.
Well, tell us how you can create, for those listeners, because some people say, wow, I don't know if I know how to cook anything without any animal products in it. Well, how can you create really hearty meals with enough protein and without any animal products in them?
Okay, well, most people actually do know a few recipes that are vegan already. They may have a chili that they've always loved or a lentil soup that they got a recipe from aunt or, you know, this kind of thing. So often people discover that they actually have some great vegan recipes already. And most of us use about 10 recipes kind of over our lifespan, you know, that become our favorites. And so what it means when you start switching is that you learn a few for those hearty main courses that are based on plant foods and usually different ways to use beans, peas, and lentils. and build meals around those and make them taste very good.
Sure. Now, a lot of people, of course, for many years, people who are on typical question people would ask, because I'm a vegan myself, because I feel that that's the optimal diet for health and longevity and wellness.
It seems to be, according to the statistics, doesn't it?
The more and more, you know, the studies come out, it just supports it. It's great. But, you know, a lot of people will say, well, but how do you get your protein? And they don't realize you can get protein in a lot of foods. And, of course, there used to be the theory about protein complementing, where you had to combine grains and beans all at one meal. Let's talk about that whole theory of complementing protein together. Is that really necessary?
Yeah. It was in the 80s, Francis Moore LePage's book. Even in the 70s, Diet for a Small Planet told people that they have to carefully eat their peanut butter with some bread, or have lentil soup with a crusty loaf of French bread or crackers, in order to have the legume, that's the beans, peas, and lentils, combining with the grain, eat it at the same moment in the same meal. And what we found out after a while was that didn't have to happen, that our body can pool the different amino acids you get from different plant foods over the course of a day. And it works out perfectly well. So you could have your peanut butter at one meal and your bread at another. Now, in practice, we actually like those things together. You know, we like to have a combination of plant foods, but it can work if you don't. So you don't have to really worry about that kind of thing.
So as long as you're getting a good variety of healthy whole foods throughout the day, and of course getting enough calories from those foods to maintain your weight, you're really getting all the protein your body really needs, isn't it?
Yes, unless you ate entirely fruit, which people
okay.
don't do. But half the world's protein comes from grain.
Mm-hmm.
So grains are a really important part, and people that like to have oatmeal at breakfast and some sandwiches at lunch and some rice at supper, they're getting a significant amount of protein from those foods, which we don't, in kind of normal American terms, think of as protein food, but they actually are. And we also get protein from the different vegetables. I mean, leafy greens, in terms of percentage calories from protein, they have as much as a burger patty does, 30-40% calories from protein. You've got to eat more of the greens, but even those contribute. So, and then the legumes are the really heavy hitters for protein.
Well, let's take a look. Someone wants to look at a daily menu. Let's say, what does a nutritionally adequate vegetarian or vegan day's menu actually look like? Give us some examples.
All right. Maybe you can think of one that you like, too, after. But people often eat a vegan breakfast if they use a non-dairy milk at some point or don't use milk. But a lot of the things people like for breakfast are vegan. You know, you have your oatmeal or your cereal or maybe your toast and peanut butter and some fruit. And so that's the start of the day is very vegan. And then for lunch, somebody might like to have a bean salad. Go through the salad bar, get chickpeas, a lot of veggies. For dinner, they might have a chili and cornbread or some veggie sticks with that. So there's an easy combination of very familiar things. That's an example. What would be a day that you might think of?
Well, I think that's very similar to a typical day I would have. And I always try to have a good whole grain, high fiber breakfast, actually, you know, and using soy milk in place of cow's milk and fresh fruit. And whether a lot of times I'll have oatmeal, you know, with some nuts on it and cinnamon. And I use a little bit of some of the organic stevia instead of sugar these days, you know, on things to keep the calories down. And, of course, lunchtime's more of a salad or a vegetarian sandwich, sometimes with soup. And in the evening, that's when I do a lot more vegetables, you know, whether it's a veggie stir fry, brown rice, with another salad. I try to eat more salads these days. And typically dessert, I'll have fruit or I have some recipes. Oh, you got some great recipes for healthy desserts in there.
Oh,
I see.
We sure do. I was really quite thrilled. I worked together with a chef, Joseph Forrest, on this book, Cooking
yes.
Vegan. And I knew a lot about nutrition. And I've worked with him for many years, and he knew a lot about mouthfeel and you know, how all the things chefs know. And I didn't understand any of that. And I used to make recipes that were good nutritionally.
Yes.
And he would taste them and, you know, not make that impressed a face. And then after a while, I started doing things that were better. I mean, he's really the chef that did the taste expertise. But I started getting the drift of what's involved from a chef. So we had a real collaboration of the chef skills about taste and flavor,
right.
and the nutritionist, dietitian skills about what you really need in terms of nutrition. So all the recipes in our Cooking Vegetarian, Cooking Vegan, have a nutritional analysis. So you
right.
can find out exactly how much protein, how much calcium, all the different things.
Yes, and in fact, I noticed you even list how many omega-3 fatty acids are in there, too. So
that's right.
So you
get... well, I want people to succeed wherever they are. So this book, Cooking Vegan, isn't necessarily only for people that might decide they're going to be vegan. It might be for somebody who has a, you know, son who comes home from college and is, you know, needing some good recipes like that once in a while. But a lot of people will think, gee, I want to prevent cancer, or I want to lower my risk for heart disease. I want to eat more vegan foods. And it's good to have some things that taste really good. And you know the sodium content, and you're including all the nutrients you need. So that's what we're really aiming for. Show people how to do this in great health and also really enjoy the experience. And one of the things that was fun working with Joseph, he likes the whole chef experience, the cooking experience, to be fun, like to really be a pleasure. And so I've learned a lot about just making that experience something that you look forward to, and yet making it very simple. I know for myself, I only will prepare food probably once or twice a week, put some in the freezer, that kind of thing, a lot
I
of
see.
The times. I mean, I love cooking, and I do it more than that, but my kind of standard is very, very simple, and things that you can enjoy over several days, and it can be not too daunting an experience.
Now, let's talk about some of the practical things. For instance, one of the things people think about is vegetable proteins, getting their protein from beans, peas, lentils, and other foods that, of course, the whole family could enjoy together. What are some easy ways for making beans, peas, and lentils into some of the menus?
Well, one of the things that has inspired me is I've traveled quite a bit, and I recognize that people in different cultures use legumes very beautifully. I mean, they're less expensive and less demanding on the environment than meat is, and people in various cultures have relied on these for a source of protein. And so if you start thinking about Italian food or Mexican food or food from Asia, you discover the ways they've used tofu or black beans or white beans. And I found it delightful working with Joseph, say, to find things that you could do with white beans to bring out the Italian flavors and have a bean salad that was like that.
Right.
Or tofu dishes. I mean, people may initially think tofu, I don't know, it's kind of got a weird texture. But if you also thought that of a raw chicken breast, like nobody would eat it like that. They would do something interesting with it and bring out flavor and texture in different ways. And so, of course, the Chinese culture has developed wonderful ways of using tofu that are delicious. And one of the things that I really enjoyed, I worked with a men's group once, this group of older guys that were all wanting not to get prostate cancer, were wanting to learn how to cook healthy. And there were a few doctors in the group. They'd been meeting for years, and they just decided to learn healthy cooking. And they asked me to help them. And so we put together a kind of concept in this book that was Stir Fry 101. And it was just, I realized that this was the ideal recipe for guys, because you could use so many different ingredients and use what you found at the store, or maybe some guys don't actually like using a recipe, but they need a little bit of something to jump off, you know.
Right, right, sure.
So we just gave guidelines about Stir Fry 101, and these fellows had such a good time just putting together the different vegetables. And we taught them how, so this is in our book, the stir-fry approach. But you use the more dense vegetables like onions and cook them first slowly and get the onion to have that sweetness develop. And then you can add some of the more dense vegetables and add things like chickpeas and tofu for more protein. And then add the lighter vegetables and then add some sauces at the end. Want to add a little bit of liquid. So anyway, the whole evolution becomes very interesting. And some people may just pick one or two recipes that become their favorites forevermore.
Yes. You know, next to protein, probably one of the questions that a lot of people ask about vegan diets is, what about calcium? If you don't have any cow's milk, where can you get the calcium? Tell us a little bit about the plant sources of calcium.
That's right. And as an older person myself, I've been tracking my bone density since I was 50 and actually found it's increased over time. You know, I've been careful and I make sure that I have lots of calcium-rich foods. And these are things like broccoli and kale, which have close to twice the calcium absorption from compared with milk. Like, they're really high calcium absorption.
Yes.
And tofu's another one. You have to check the label and see that it's made with calcium. And we recommend, I know when I have clients, that they choose the fortified non-dairy milks, whether you're choosing soy milk, rice milk, almond milk, whatever different kind, make sure that it's got calcium and also vitamin D. So these foods, and also almonds and blackstrap molasses and sesame seeds, all are good sources of calcium, and we just build them into our menus. Another, which you might not expect, would be oranges and figs. So we can make sure that our foods, instead of having a beverage that has nothing but sugar in it, that it's providing us with calcium. And this makes a big difference over time. So I know that my co-author on some other books, Brenda Davis, her bone density and mine are really good, you know, and we've just taken care with that. We also want to make sure we have enough vitamin D, either from the fortified soy milks or from supplements and sunlight.
So in other words, vegan diets you feel are very adequate nutritionally?
Yes, absolutely. We've established that they're perfect for children. The children that are on vegan diets have proven from the research studies that their height is normal. Their weight is a little bit below that of many non-vegan children, but that's an advantage because so many young people are overweight. But the vegans are in a very good form in terms of height and weight. And when you talk about adults, the body mass index of vegans is excellent, whereas most other groups, even lacto-vegetarians or people who eat fish or people who eat meat, their body mass index is above the 25. That's the cutoff line for a healthy BMI.
So the vegan diets are not only nutritionally adequate, but by eating a vegan diet, you're avoiding some of the bad things in typical diets.
You sure are.
Tell about all those things.
Yeah, well, you're avoiding a lot of saturated fat. You're entirely avoiding cholesterol. Many vegans are kind of taking care with their sodium intake, and they might use something like Bragg's or, you know, something like that for a bit of flavor, but they don't have high sodium intakes. They're usually, the trans fats are low. Those are things in a lot of pastries or in dairy products.
Right.
So they just, having a diet that has proven itself to lower your risk of prostate cancer, bowel cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and get you to a lower body mass index, like a healthier weight for your height.
Now, you're talking about raising kids on vegan diets, and I have a daughter myself who we've raised on a vegan diet. She's 13 now. She hasn't had any animal products in her life, and really tall and growing very good, and she's into girls' basketball and girls' soccer and all types of sports and so forth. Very active, but, you know, sometimes that's a challenge for parents to put together a vegan or vegetarian lunchbox for kids to take to school. What are some ideas?
Oh, yeah, it can be. And we look at this in a number of different ways. So we've got a section in the cooking vegan book that is satisfying sandwiches, and also another section on wraps. But you can make sandwiches better based on bean spreads like hummus. And of course, in supermarkets these days, they have a number of delicious types of hummus, which you can just purchase ready-made in an instant. And you can also make your own and even use different sorts of beans. So that's one delicious high-protein spread. Now, some people like to go more to the veggie meats. The kids want to have a sandwich that looks like somebody else's sandwich that has a slice of something in it. And so those are more processed, but they're very tasty, and that works for a lot of people. Now, some other cultures have interesting sandwiches, like nori rolls are the Japanese sandwich, and samosas are the East Indian sandwich. And so there are sandwiches and from around the world that can be very creative. We also have some rice wraps that are like sandwiches. So we've got a whole list of possibilities of things that you can put in as a filling and things that you can use as spreads and still have a delicious vegan sandwich so you won't get bored with it. And of course, there's always peanut butter and jelly.
Sure. Well, you know, we're coming to the end already of our interview. It's gone very, very fast. But once again, the book by Vasanto Molina, registered dietitian, and of course, she's a co-author of the book with Joseph Forrest. It's called Cooking Vegan, published by the book publishing company. And in closing, tell us a little bit about your website and the information you have on that.
Okay, well, my website is NutriSpeak.com, like nutrition, speak, NutriSpeak.com, and it's a website that shows our different books. I've had a great pleasure in helping people, whether they have food sensitivities or are going more in a raw direction or like cooking or just want to learn a lot about nutrition, and with several different authors, and have been delighted to see how many people are really making a difference with their dietary choices.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Vasanto, for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
Thank you, John.
Have a great day.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.